Good evening to everyone. Greetings to you from here in the United States and around the globe. What a joy it is to speak with you again on our podcast called Long Story Short. Last podcast, we concentrated on what's in a name. And all this month, the month of February, we are celebrating African American History Month. So we are highlighting activities of the African American experience. And tonight it is interesting that we have with us one of my former students who has agreed to be the technical assistant for this podcast and others, and it's a joy to welcome her to the program. Hi, Sheikha.
Hello, hello, Dr. Hardy. Hello, everyone. It's definitely a great opportunity, and I'm glad to be here. And I know that on last night's show was awesome. It really was. I learned a whole lot. And you, right in the beginning of the show last night, you recited one of my favorite poems, Mother to Son, by Langston Hughes.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was in eighth grade, my teacher, she made me memorize that poem, and I had to recite it in front of the class and also in front of the school. So that's one of my favorite poems.
Oh, wow. Would you do it again for us tonight?
Sure. Mother to Son by Langston Hughes. Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, eyes have been climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now. Eyes are still going, honey. Eyes are still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
That is great. The idea that I take from that and what Langston Hughes was saying to you and to all of us is that we just don't give up. We keep going, even though it may seem to be hard, but we don't give up. And Langston Hughes was writing during the same time as Dr. Carter G. Woodson and others had created African American History Month. Of course, in those days, in 1915, it was African American History Week or Negro History Week. And last night, that's what we covered. And so the poem that you have recited is indicative of what we are doing with this program. Tonight, we want to look at medical apartheid. Medical apartheid. Medical science during the last 20 years of the 20th century and these first 15 years in this 21st century has made great strides in the advancement of human health. But as a celebration of African American History Month, however, we should never forget how African Americans have been treated, used, abused, and just misunderstood by the medical community here in the United States. And from our forced time of slavery starting in the 1400s all the way to the time that we landed as a people at Jamestown, Virginia, 1619, to the present day, African American people have been involved in the medical experience in this country. from a historical perspective, Africans as a people of over 3,000 years ago created practices in medicine. So a lot of people even today will say, well, we were kings and queens in Africa, and we discovered great cures for the illness that the community experienced in those days. And yes, it is true, we did. Over 3,000 years ago, African people created practices in medicine. A well-known name as a contributor was Imhotep. I-M-H-O-T-E-P, Imhotep. And he is known as the African progenitor of metaphysics and medicine. According to a scholarly paper that was written by Dr. Asa G. Hilliard in 1976, he identifies Imhotep as a man of African descent. And Dr. Hilliard's paper was called Free Your Mind, Return to the Source. So Free Your Mind, Return to the Source. It was written in 1976. We are celebrating African American History Month, all 28 days in February. And to make a long story short, let's highlight several areas of concern when we examine history, issues, and current events, and the future of the African-American experience. Today, we want to look at what is actually going on in medicine and how we look back at history. My information that I would share with you in this podcast is that in 2003, a person by the name of Edwin Black authored a study in the history of eugenics. The book has the title of War Against the Weak. Eugenics now is the science of improving the human population through the process of breeding. The outcome was to breed or create a master race. And this practice continued well into the 1950s in this country, when African Americans became victims of this practice when white plantation owners wanted the strongest black men to mate with the strongest black women. And this would create then a master black group of people to work in the fields and create then the workforce for the white owner class in this country. So Edwin Black writes between 1890 and 1920, German Lutherans, Irish Catholics, Russian Jews, and Slavic Orthodox people seem to have flooded with the place we now call Ellis Island in New York. And these European immigrants were not desirable to the so-called number of white Americans already here. And from your history lessons, you all may remember that this particular country was founded by individuals who came from several parts of Europe, and particularly the Mayflower Compact and others as the pilgrims came. And we know we have a number of holidays that we celebrate now, particularly Thanksgiving and so forth, where they met with the Native Americans. But these individuals, though, who eventually became what you and I would call Boston Blue Bloods, did not like the people who were coming from Germany, you know, these German Lutherans, because that's not the religion that they these people who already here were practicing, and Irish Catholics and Russian Jews and Slavic people from that part of what we call lower European people is what they called it in those days. And so not only were these people undesirable, but Native Americans were put in reservations or put on reservations. And black folk just could not assimilate because of their black skin, and they were ostracized and set aside, but still looked to be the workhorse or the workforce for the white owner class in this country. So they created breeding farms, Jim Crow laws, and pure segregation of the races in this country. So the backdrop says that of this experience is that we then became the subject. We, African Americans, became the subject of medical persons who wanted the so-called pure race. Each of us might remember also that the Nazi party in Germany during the late 1920s, all of the 1930s and the 1940s wanted to create a master race. But we should know here today, as we celebrate African American History Month, is that the people who actually created this master race concept were right here in the United States of America. And so the Germans were really copying what happened here in this country. And I caution everybody, all of our listeners, that when the lunatic fringe of any society takes over and they begin to do the kinds of things that we're now listing for you in this eugenics experience, it can happen again. We should never forget that this has happened to us. These experiences are not to be taken lightly. Segregation, Jim Crow, and pure disrespect for the human being because of their color, of their religion, of their culture is an abomination. We must not allow that to happen again to us. Now, what are some of these atrocities that took place? Many of them were exercised during the 1940s, the 1930s, the 1940s, and the 1950s, where black women who were considered to be unhuman, those individuals were sterilized to never be able to have children. And even in the book, War Against the Weak, Edwin Black mentions the 3,000 individuals between 1892 and to all the way through to 1919, 3,000 black men and women, and some white folk at that time, were also lynched. He says that there were about 200 white people, but about 2,000 black people lynched during those times, and there were others. The other group of people that were here that United States people did not like were Chinese. And so there were Chinese laws applied to those people that came in. And what we should probably mention here, even though we're talking about African American history, but we should know, though, that the Chinese people were on the west coast of the United States long before there was a United States of America, long before 1776 or 1789. And those individuals in San Francisco and all of the and many of the other areas along the west coast, in addition to the fact that Hispanic persons, or persons of Spanish descent, were also on that West Coast. And in fact, during the Spanish-American War, the land, the most of the land that was now then Mexico, was taken away from them. And we now have, of course, the Rio Grande River as the border. But these kinds of atrocities took place. You may also remember that persons of Asian descent, particularly Japanese, were put in concentration camps during the Second World War. So we really have to think about what has actually happened in this country when the lunatic fringe of our society takes charge. I am not optimistic about what is happening in our country right now. This is 2015 February, and an element right this minute in the Republican Party is a lunatic fringe, and I don't mind saying it, and I hope that individuals who will tune in will hear it clearly. A lunatic fringe is now in place in both houses of Congress, in the United States Senate and in the United States House of Representatives. And we have an African-American president, and his administration are working hard to change the country for the better. But focusing on some of the atrocities, many of you may remember that there was something called the Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment. What a terrible, terrible experience that was for those men who were given syphilis. And then, even though there was penicillin available, they were not given the cure, and many of them worked and died. But when President Kennedy was in office, all the way to the time of President William Jefferson Clinton, individuals knew of what was going on in Tuskegee, but it was President Clinton who issued a decree asking those individuals to come to the White House and to be given an apology, which he did do. That was good. But I want to bring something else to your attention tonight, and that is that I was at Johns Hopkins University in the 1970s, and one afternoon, my professor came in and said, I had just left a meeting where over 80% of the cancer strands will be discovered and we will have a cure for them in less than 30 years. And this was 1972. 30 years has now passed, and I now know that in Baltimore there was a woman by the name of Henrietta Lacks, L-A-C-K-S. And she died, and her cells, her DNA, was used at Johns Hopkins University Hospital for the cure of cancer. And those telogenes are the ones that right this minute are still making great strides in the cure for cancer. But the ironic and the horrible situation here is that her family was never aware of what had happened at Johns Hopkins, my university. I graduated from there in 1976. And a woman by the name of Rebecca Skloots, S-K-L-O-O-T, wrote a book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. The doctors took her cells without asking. Those cells never died. They launched a medical revolution and a multi-million-dollar industry. More than 20 years later, her children found out their lives would never be the same. It's what's on the front cover of the book written by Rebecca Sloot. If she had not written the book, if she had not done her research, we would not have this story right now. I'm running out of time, but hopefully as we begin to continue to expose these kinds of atrocities, these kinds of this history that occurred in the United States of America, we're not talking someplace else around the world. This happened here. So I would like to close tonight also with a poem that I had learned when in school, just as Sheikha mentioned that her teachers explained to her that she should know these poems. And so she learned poems of Langston Hughes. But one of the poems that I learned was a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay. And it's called Renaissance, as we would call it when you look at the word. And it goes like this: all I could see from where I stood were three long mountains and a wood. And over these things I could not see, for these were the things that bounded me. And I could touch them with my hand almost, I thought, from where I stand. And reaching up my hand to try, I screamed to feel it. Sky. I screamed, and lo, infinity came down and settled over me, and forced back my scream into my chest, and bent back my arm upon my breast, and pressing of the undefined, the definition on my mind, held up before my eyes a glass through which my shrinking sight did pass. That poem is indicative of the fact that we as a people must never let the spirit in us to survive, never let it die. Even when we think that all things have turned against us, like these medical situations that we've endured in this country, but we're not through yet. We have the nature to survive. But I would propose that not only we survive, but that we prosper in this so-called land of the free, home of the brave, and the most prosperous country on the planet right now. I thank you for listening. Sheikha, did I cover anything, or is there anything that we missed tonight?
No, awesome information, Doc. Really appreciate it, all of your research and all of these different nuggets. I will add, since I'm the technical assistant,
for
the podcast, just to remind everyone, to tune in. People can tune in various ways. You can Skype in, and you can listen live via the website at blogtalkradio.com/longstoryshort. The call-in number, if you have any questions for Dr. Hardy, is 347-843-4163, and be sure to press 1. That gets you in the queue, and it's almost like putting your hand up, saying, hey, I've got a question, or hey, I've got a comment. We'd love to hear that from you. And I think that's it. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to the show on tomorrow.
Yes.